From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, both houses of the legislature adjourn for the end of the 2017 legislative session with major issues unresolved. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his thoughts on the politics of the end of session and will report on the Rensselaer County village of Hoosick Falls already dealing with a state Superfund site over contaminated water may soon add another location to the list. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Well, all eyes on the Capitol this week as the Senate and the Assembly adjourned on Wednesday late. We are joined this week by Casey Seiler. He hosts Public Television's New York Now, the statewide television program, of course, and the senior editor for news for the Albany Times Union. Hey, Casey, thanks for taking a little bit of time to talk to us about the end of session.
No problem.
Probably the biggest block to some of the major issues, one being New York City mayoral control of the schools, which is tied to charter schools, is the Assembly Speaker, Carl Hastie, the Bronx, who ended up saying not only are they not going to deal with those issues, but he doesn't plan on coming back to deal with them in any special session either.
Right. That's the initial response. And when you say that the issue of mayoral control has become linked to charter schools, it has become strategically linked to charter schools by the Senate. You know, in the past, it has been passed as kind of a standalone measure. This time around, and potentially going forward, support for mayoral control of the schools in New York City, the public schools, will, it would appear, be linked to improvements, you know, stepped up aid, raising the cap for charter schools as well. That is an impulse that Senate Republicans have tried to put forward. The governor has essentially said, well, it looks like that's the world we're dealing with, that grand bargain, and there are a lot of them in Albany, is going to be the deal going forward. But in this case, it does seem to have, that linkage seems to have really impeded any kind of real climactic end to the session. What you've got instead is either an ellipses or something of an anticlimax. As you note, if they're going to do anything with mayoral control, they're going to have to come back to do it. There are also dozens of extensions of local revenue bills that failed to get passed. That was something that the Assembly Democrats, under the aforementioned Carl Hastie, tried to link to mayoral control. Of course, those localities are going to start screaming and yelling if that revenue isn't forthcoming, and those, you know, tax extensions actually do die. You know, you're talking about things like a 1% lodging tax in a specific county or something like that. So that could be problematic, to put it lightly, as we get deeper into the year.
Is that enough of an impetus for the governor, Andrew Cuomo, the Democrat, to push on the Speaker and say, hey, listen, we need to deal with these issues. The public wants us to deal with some of these, of course, and get back to Albany and let's have a special session.
Yeah, I mean, publicly at least, the governor has been very quiet since the budget passed in the, you know, in the second week of April. The governor, in fact, came out and said, we got pretty much everything done in the budget. There really are no major issues. But I'm always, of course, happy to talk about things. And that definitely seems to have been the presiding sentiment of the second half of the legislative session. There were a couple of significant things done, but there was really kind of no big idea. This entire session has been problematic for the governor, and of course what's problematic for the governor often ends up rolling downhill and being problematic for lawmakers and the good people of New York State as well. You know, it started off with kind of bad blood between the governor and the legislature over the scotched legislative raises at the end of 2016, and then the governor took his State of the State tour, speaking to kind of handpicked audiences instead of delivering a message to the legislature. The rollout of his executive budget proposal was somewhat rocky, and that kind of set the stage for the rather dysfunctional completion of the budget, although there were big things that were passed in the budget, including raising the age of criminal responsibility and the passage of the governor's, you know, free tuition plan for SUNY schools. But that was pretty much the end of it.
We also have the specter of the coming trials of some of the governor's former aides in a pay-to-play alleged scandal over some contracts with the SUNY Startup Initiative, and that looming over the Capitol as we go forward. And we certainly, in this session, have not seen any significant ethics reform.
Nope, that's an excellent point. That was thought to be another thing that the legislature might press the governor on in the back half of session, procurement reform, which has been advocated for strongly by State Controller Tom DiNapoli and many government reform groups. It's clear that loosey-goosey oversight might have contributed to some of the bid rigging scandals that are wrapped up in the Prococo case involving the governor's former top aide, Joe Prococo, as well as Elaine Calleros, the former leader of SUNY Polytechnic Institute, who played a key role. Both of them played a key role in these big upstate development projects that were kind of plunged into scandal. But in the end, there wasn't enough coherent, collaborative, legislative will to put something on the table that would kind of jam the governor, something that perhaps could sustain a veto override conceivably. They just couldn't get it together. And the governor proposed a long list of reforms in his State of the State. He does that a lot and throws them into his budget plan, but ends up not really pressing very hard for them. This year, he really didn't make much of an effort at all on ethics reforms, such as closing the LLC loophole, which is an evergreen that the governor benefits from more than any other state politician, and electoral reforms as well, which after the chaos that marked some elections in 2016, especially the Democratic primary, the presidential primary in April of 2016, you know, where there were huge numbers of voters just purged from the rolls accidentally, apparently, in Brooklyn, you would have thought that it would have been a good year for electoral reform, but no. So a lot left undone.
Casey Seiler, senior editor of news for the Times Union and host of Public Television's New York Now. We really appreciate you taking some time to talk with us about the end of session today.
Always good talking to you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. A stalemate in Albany as the legislature, both houses, adjourned without solving mayoral control of New York City's schools, tied to charter schools, also the extension of sales tax provisions for county governments, but slipped into the Senate, which did pass in the one house, was a bill to name the Tappan Zee Bridge after former Governor Mario Cuomo.
Well, Mario Cuomo, who always eschewed having things named after him or for him, might be pleased. I mean, he's not the governor. He's gone, and I'm sure this is something that would be of great joy to his son. Nevertheless, I think that this holdup in Albany is all over charter schools. The Senate Republicans wanting to please often their very wealthy supporters who are fiercely for charter schools and some suspect not that happy with public education. I've always said, David, and you know this, that if you want to support charter schools as an alternative choice for students, okay, do it. But don't tie it to the diminution of public education, you know, that the money follows the student, that instead of supporting our public schools and making them better with more money, we're going to take more money away from them, thereby making them even worse.
So, Alan, despite the fact that the legislature's houses have adjourned and Speaker Hastie says he won't return, will that change? In other words, will we have a special session? At least Brian Cole, the Republican Assembly Minority Leader, seems to think so, saying, I suspect we may be back before the end of 2017. What do you think?
Well, you know, this is one of those just stupid and awful examples of what happens when the legislature is accountable to no one. You know, I've often said that we have something in each house called the iron law of oligarchy, meaning that the top person really becomes the dictator. And now you have this unseemly fight, which negates the will of the people, so that the top guys, Hastie in the Assembly and Flanagan in the Senate, just act like petulant children. Now, if we had initiative and referendum in this state, this would all have stopped long ago. In other words, if people could put things on the ballot and say, okay, you get term limits because your behavior is so bad, it would make a big difference. So if you had initiative referendum and term limits, you wouldn't see any of this nonsense that's going on in New York State right now. On top of that, you find this band of renegade so-called traitors to the Democratic Party who have made common cause with the Republicans and who are basically keeping them in power. And it is something that, you know, finally, I think people are getting wise to what's going on. These eight people, the senators, have basically sold out to the Republicans. And how do you run in the Bronx, boss Jeff Klein? How does he run in the Bronx as a progressive Democrat when everybody knows and the word is getting out, even among his constituents who don't always think about these things, that he is the reason that progressive ideas aren't happening because he's giving his votes to John Flanagan, the Senate leader. And what's happening is that these people are saying no. So it's a mess and it should be changed. And the more that they do this kind of thing, the more impetus there will be for change. You know, the only reason I have any feelings about the Constitutional Convention being an idea that might work out. I don't think it will, by the way. I think what's going to happen is the same old guys will elect their friends and their buddies to the Constitutional Convention. But if you got a runaway Constitutional Convention, and if they did do initiative and referendum, and if they did do term limits, let me tell you, it would make a huge change in New York State. You might get closer to a democracy. And I'm thinking that one of the reasons that both leaders, Flanagan in the Senate and the House and the Assembly and the man I always call Boss Hastie are against it is because they know that this convention might really do something that would change the political culture of New York forever.
Dr. Nancy Zimpher Allen, scheduled to step down as the chancellor of the State University of New York at the end of this month, this week agreed to stay on a bit longer. She was officially designated by the SUNY Board of Trustees as chancellor emeritus.
Well, that's a nice thing. I think she deserves it. She worked very hard, and she deserves to be called emeritus. I'm a guy who believes that you reward people. When your professors leave after a lifetime, they make you emeritus. That's what happened with me. It's no big thing. It's an honor, but it's no big thing. But then the other thing is that she's just staying till the next chancellor comes in. So we're not talking about turning the world on its ear, to mix a metaphor.
Well, first this week, the official confirmation of Paul Feinman as the first openly gay associate judge. She's on the Court of Appeals, New York's highest court.
Well, why should one not get an appointment like that because they're gay? It's ridiculous. You know, you judge somebody on what they do and what they say. Now, of course, it is the right thing to do. Governor Cuomo did the right thing. But, and it's always a big but, we all know he's running for president. And if it is true that the estimates that 10% of the country is gay or lesbian, and some people think it's more, I don't know, it might be less. But it's a pretty good thing to do if you're running for president and you want that vote, especially among people who vote, and they vote in large numbers. We know that because it's important, and they know it.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Rensselaer County village of Hoosick Falls, already dealing with a state Superfund site contaminated with the chemical PFOA, may soon add other locations to the list. We get an update from the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
Hoosick Falls Mayor Rob Allen, elected in March, welcomed residents to the Hoosick Falls Central School Auditorium Monday evening, even if it probably wasn't the place everyone wanted to be.
You know, it's kind of similar to going to the doctors to, you know, you have some bad news and you just have to figure out how bad it is, and some of it will be good and some of it will be bad, and we just have to sort of understand that this is where we're at, and we have to know where we're at to know what's coming next.
Representatives from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and companies St. Gobain and Honeywell presented new information on sites contaminated with the chemical PFOA and other compounds. Chemical concentrations were given for soil, groundwater, and other substances as the investigations expand across the Rensselaer County community. Last year, the facility owned by St. Gobain on McCaffrey Street, where PFOA was used in manufacturing, was declared a New York State Superfund. Dan Riley with St. Gobain contractor CT Mail presented the latest groundwater numbers gathered at McCaffrey Street.
The range of PFOA in those samples ranges from non-detect to 130,000 parts per trillion. The primary range of that is from not detect to 27,000.
There is no federal or state guidance level for PFOA in groundwater, but experts say the numbers are alarming. In drinking water, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's guidance level is 70 parts per trillion. Same goes for New York State. In neighboring Vermont, the drinking water guidance level is 20 parts per trillion. The St. Gobain site at Liberty Street showed its highest PFOA groundwater concentration at 48,000 parts per trillion. The concentrations are the highest reported to date. Honeywell is investigating sites where it used to operate on John Street in Hoosick Falls and River Road in the town of Hoosick. In addition to elevated PFOA levels, volatile organic compounds, referred to as TCE and 111-TCA, have been detected. 9 of 19 surrounding properties have tested for elevated VOCs and will require remediation. DEC is also taking a closer look at sites on First Street and Mechanic Street. The Hoosick Falls landfill is also being investigated. DEC Commissioner Basil Segos says as investigations continue, additional Superfund sites may be declared.
We started with one site about a year and a half ago. Now we've got maybe six sites. And that's all because we've gotten tips from people locally. Our own sampling in the river and elsewhere has shown that there are causes for concern, so we move towards those sources. And we'll come back here to explain that to the community as often as we can.
None of the sites have yet been classified as a federal Superfund site, though calls to do so have come from top elected officials. County resident and former EPA Region 2 Administrator Judith Enck, who warned locals a year and a half ago to not drink or cook with contaminated water before carbon filtration systems were added to the village water supply and private wells, said a federal Superfund declaration is critical.
So I think it's absolutely crucial for Administrator Scott Pruitt, the new head of the EPA, to make a timely decision. All of the testing data indicates that this ranks as federal Superfund, meaning the contamination is significant enough. And that was before we heard about 130,000 and 48,000 parts per trillion.
Enck added that the Hoosick Falls numbers are among the highest concentrations she's seen anywhere. DEC began working with the U.S. Geological Survey in the summer of 2016 to study groundwater in the region with hopes of locating a new, uncontaminated water supply for the village. A report is still in the works. After the formal presentation Monday, residents were able to ask questions of representatives from the companies, DEC, and the State Department of Health. There's more on the contamination crisis in upstate New York and Vermont at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
Meanwhile, an environmental group has expanded the number of locations where it and its partners test water quality, and the expanded information is now available at a centralized location online. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
If you want to go for a swim in the Hudson River and wonder if it's safe, Riverkeeper has water quality testing data from some 425 locations throughout, from the Adirondacks to New York Harbor and along Hudson River tributaries. The data is displayed on interactive maps that have been expanded this year to include two-thirds more locations than a year ago. Riverkeeper Water Quality Program Director Dan Shapley puts his money where the information is.
I would swim in the Hudson. I have swum in the Hudson. I would do it again. I would choose where to swim based on the best available data.
The water quality data reflects the presence of sewage or other fecal contamination measured using Environmental Protection Agency approved methods.
And really, a large swath of the middle of the Hudson often very good for swimming, very, very safe from a water quality perspective.
He says rain, however, is one of the main triggers of contamination.
And we see that impact of rain is most pronounced, not surprisingly, in places like the Capital District or around Utica, where you have combined sewer systems. So those sewers overflow when it rains, releasing untreated sewage right to the water. So that remains our biggest problem.
And certain areas take longer to recover.
We can see in some places, like the Capital District, where even 2 or 3 days after a rain storm, there's still poor water quality, even that long after. In other parts of the river, there's a higher volume of water, things are flushed more quickly, so that the recovery time is faster.
The database at riverkeeper.org/water-quality assists swimmers and other water enthusiasts like kayakers. Beacon-based Mountaintops Outfitters Kayak Company is at Scenic Hudson's Long Dock Park. Katie Bainey is co-owner of Mountaintops Outfitters.
It's definitely helpful for us to know what the water quality is in our area because we do kayaking tours, we do lessons where people, you know, are getting in the water, practicing rescues, and then just, you know, we do have a lot of people who ask about swimming down there, so it's helpful if we can help out with that information, being able to look up that information, have a resource, and be like, yes, it is safe, no, it's not right now.
And her tours focus on the following areas in the river.
We generally stay between, like, the Newburgh Beacon Bridge and Bannerman's Island. But we do a lot around, like, Dennings Point area. And there's, you know, a lot of people will go down to Dennings Point to swim.
As for swimming, New York Open Water's 7th Annual Eight Bridges Hudson River Swim is in progress. The 120-mile swim that begins at the Rip Van Winkle Bridge in the Catskills and finishes in New York City promotes water quality and turns to Riverkeeper's water quality data. Shapley calls every water quality sample a vote for clean water.
The expansion of the website was really to just pull in into one place all of the projects that we had started over the last couple of years. So the Mohawk River, the Upper Hudson River are the two biggest, but there are other creeks and tributaries and waterfronts that we just hadn't been displaying in one place, and now we're doing that at one location on the web.
Shapley says the water quality data helped to document the need for New York's $2.5 billion Clean Water Infrastructure Act of 2017. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1725 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.